Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden years. Mark Levonier, your host for an hour of crime. Later on, the series, I was a communist for the FBI. But first, an episode of The Lineup called The Cigar Box Boys Case, heard on CBS on February 15th, 1951.
Ladies and gentlemen, we take you now behind the scenes of a police headquarters in a great American city, where under the cold, glaring lights will pass before us the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. This is The Lineup.
Sit right here, Mrs. Denny, next to me.
Well, thank you, Lieutenant.
Now, don't be nervous. The people on the other side of the screen are the ones who are supposed to be nervous.
They can't see us on this side?
Not a thing.
That's for sure now.
No one in the lineup can see you.
Maybe the man you've caught isn't the one I saw running away from the holdup.
We hope he is.
May I have your attention, please? You people out there on the other side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention, please? Thank you. My name is Greb, Sergeant Matt Greb. I'll explain the lineup to you. Each of the suspects you will see will be numbered. I'll call off a number, their name, and charge. If you have any questions or identifications, please remember the number assigned to the prisoner as I call his name. At the end of the line, when I ask for questions or identifications, call out the number. If you're sure or not too sure of the suspect, have him held. The officers who took your name will assist you. They're seated among you. Please be prompt with your questions or identifications. When the prisoners leave here, they are sent to the washroom and dressed back into their jail clothes. It makes it quite difficult to bring them back after they leave here. The questions I ask these suspects are merely to get a natural tone of voice, so do not pay too much attention to their answers, as they often lie. Bring on the line. All right, this way, boys. Move it up to the end of the stage. That's it. Keep it moving. Move it. All right, now turn and face front, hands to your sides. Look straight ahead. Ahead, inch, not at your feet. Yes, you, number three.
Yeah.
Okay, number one, Frank Deal, armed robbery suspect. Where do you live, Frank?
Live? Who lives? I exist.
No beefs, just tell us where you live.
Got a one room at, what do you call it, Pendleton Arms.
Get too hot for you in Detroit, Frank?
Who's been in Detroit?
Who sold you the gun you were carrying without a license?
I wouldn't know. Some guy in Detroit. Self-defense is all, Sergeant. I never shut off that gun. That's a straight goods.
Get your hands away from your face.
Just scratch it.
Number two, Boaz Dragger. Alias Boaz Dragger. Alias Boaz Aggard. Suspected of armed holdup. Where do you live, Boaz?
Shack by the river. The shanty town, sort of.
Where were you last night, Boaz? We didn't find your home.
I was setting up with a friend, sick friend.
Yeah, we got him, too. How'd he happen to have that slug in him?
Ah, these guys are always in bad.
We got it out of him.
What, the slug?
The story of the slug. You're in the clear on that, anyhow.
Something out of place happened last night?
Where did you get all those names of yours? Boaz, Boaz, Boaz?
Ah, people are stupid. They can't pronounce. With the Dragger, and Aggard, I did that. Aggard is Dragger. Backwards, see?
Uh-huh.
I wasn't any place I didn't ought to be last night. What happened?
All right, Boaz, all right. Number three, George Inch, carrying concealed weapons. 5 years, state penitentiary for armed holdup and armed assault. Well, is it one stretching up, George?
My lawyer's coming down.
Your lawyer? Well, you've gotten class since we last talked to you.
See my lawyer.
What's your lawyer's name, George?
I got nothing to say. See my lawyer. I'm a citizen.
Bibsy the mob, isn't it? Isn't he your lawyer?
He went to a good college. A good college.
Yeah, for years. Number four, Willard, or Will Willard. Hold-up suspect. Disorderly conduct, assaulting an officer, resisting arrest. Well, where do you work, Will?
Hill and Ninth, car park.
Quite a celebration in your hotel last night, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was somebody's birthday.
The landlady said some shooting was going on.
Oh, just a noisy party. Nobody got hurt.
Him?
Why did you try to beat up the patrolman who arrested...
Sergeant Graham.
I'm sorry.
Yes, Lieutenant?
Number 4, hold for interrogation. Sit down, Mrs. Denny. That chair for Mrs. Denny, sir.
Yeah. We won't keep you much longer.
There you are.
Thank you.
Now, before we question the prisoner, we want to make the identification as strong as possible, Mrs. Denny.
Oh, he's the man, all right.
You sure?
Well, pretty sure.
It was rather late at night, wasn't it? 11 p.m.? How did you happen to be parked outside the drugstore?
Oh, I was parked across the street. I'd mailed a letter at the corner mailbox, and when I got home, I remembered I'd forgotten to put a stamp on it. And it had to go out last night.
Oh, you were waiting for the mailman to make his pickup then?
Yes, sir. I was waiting to see if I could get the letter back to put a stamp on it.
You saw this wiry little man go into Horn's drugstore?
Yes, Sergeant. Then I saw him come running out and run down the street.
Mm-hmm. Well, did he have anything in his hand, carry anything at all?
You mean a gun?
Anything.
Oh, I don't remember. I just remember him. It's light near the store windows, and it was that little fellow you had on the stage today.
The lineup is what we call it.
I'm almost sure it was him. I made a point remembering him.
Why, Mrs. Denny?
Mrs. Denny, there have been descriptions of the cigar box bandit in the papers, how he operates, what he looks like. You must be careful not to let those descriptions influence...
No.
Well, it's possible for a witness to...
No. That was the man I saw run out of the drugstore. I'm not saying I saw Gunner the cigar box, but I saw that man.
Did he have a cigar box under his arm?
I didn't notice.
Excuse me. Yeah?
I got the prisoner out here when you want him, Lieutenant.
Good, I'll call you.
Can I go? I better go.
Take that other door, Mrs. Denny.
I'll show you, Mrs. Denny.
It's just my husband keeps on worrying.
Well, now, you tell him not to. There won't be any trouble, and you've been a fine help. Goodbye.
Well, I just... Goodbye.
I think she knows what she saw, all right. But the suspect hasn't got a record. It's pretty cold, Ben.
I've been through their modus operandi files.
Nothing?
Paper bag robbers, Mutton Jeff robbers, put it in the hat robbers... But nobody who shoved a cigar box at the victim and told him to fill it up.
Well, it's the same general family.
No cigar box, though.
Yes, sir?
Bring him in, Quine.
Yes, sir.
Well, I hope this is our guy, Matt.
I wish he had a record. He's pretty cold, Ben.
Here he is, Lieutenant.
Thanks, Quine. Stick around.
All right.
Have a chair, Will.
Yeah, thanks, sure.
Cigarette?
What kind you got? No, that ain't my brand. Sorry. Well, what's the occasion, boys?
Oh, I just want to ask you a few questions. What were you doing about 9:15 last night, Will?
That all you want to know?
A couple of other things.
9 o'clock last night.
Where were you then?
You said 9:15 the first time.
Between 9 and 9:30.
Well, the stick-up was later than that.
How did you know that, Will?
The other man and myself says I look just like the cigar box bandit. He said the guy stuck up another drugstore around 11 o'clock last night. That makes about 30, don't it?
37.
Very good.
All right, then. Where were you around 11 last night?
Well, I wasn't parking cars. That is, just my own, that is. I had a date with my girl.
Are you off every Saturday night, Will?
Oh, I'm off every Saturday night sometimes.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, some months here every Saturday night and some months not. That's a bollocked-up schedule. Changing help all the time. You're on, you're off. You're on, you're off. You never know, one day to the next, if you're on duty or not.
When'd you get back to your flat last night?
Oh, see, I don't know. It's around 2 a.m., picked up some friends and their dates, and we had a little party.
What about the gunplay in your hotel room last night, Will?
Oh, you know that landlady, oh, boy, she's a case. Honest, she's a mental case.
Because she objects to shootings?
Who got shot? There wasn't even a gun around.
So, you don't smoke cigarettes, eh?
Well, I don't smoke your brand. But what I don't smoke is cigars.
Any kid can get an empty cigar box. He doesn't have to smoke it empty.
Tell you what I'll do. I'll give you my girl's number. You call her. You ask her where I was last night during the holdup. Is that a deal?
Check that, man.
Right.
Susquehanna 425 Ought. Hey, Sergeant, you married? Well, this girl of mine, she's dynamite. Dynamite!
Yeah, we'll put a man from the bomb squad on it.
Oh, that's very good.
How long you lived here, Will?
Well, born and raised here. Went to Packard Grade School, Stupid Junior High, Maxwell Fisher Senior High. I did a year in Spooner Business College. You can check it.
Buck with your girl around 11 last night, huh?
Yeah, just about.
Where?
Observatory Hill. You can ask her. Ruth Hurley, that's the name. Susquehanna, 425 Ought. Say, think our names will be in the papers?
Now, this is only an interrogation.
Oh, we don't mind. The name is Willard Willard. That's sort of an interesting name, ain't it, to spike a story with? Willard Willard?
This is just a routine questioning. No news value at all.
Well, now, wait a minute. Sure, some paper can get something good out of that, you know. False alarm. You know, kid the public.
You've been identified as the man who held up Horn's drugstore late last night.
Oh, golly, that's silly. That's silly. By Horn himself?
No.
Then it's just silly.
The robber was seen to run out of the store and around the corner.
Did he see the car, the witness?
Who said there was a car?
Now, wait a minute. Would you stick up a place without a car?
In that neighborhood, a man on foot could disappear into the night better than a man who's driving.
There has been a car and other cigar box stick-ups.
Yeah? What kind?
You tell us.
Sergeant. He's kidding. Oh, the sergeant. He's kidding.
Lieutenant Guthrie. Yeah? Uh-huh. Thanks. Captain Waldo.
Yeah?
The Galen Ethical Pharmacy on Quincy Avenue was held up 5 minutes ago by the Cigar Box Bandit.
That guy's a fake. He's a dirty, low-down fake.
Who's a fake? The bandit?
What do you mean, the bandit? I'm the bandit. I originated the cigar box idea. I stuck up all those other drugstores. I've been cleaning up, and nobody could lay a finger on me. So where does this phony come in?
If this is a confession, we'd better get the stenographer in.
I'm not confessing anything. I'm telling you that this other guy is strictly a phony. And I'll go before any guy I ever stuck up and have him identify me as the one and only genuine cigar store bandit. And that's an offer.
Well, what do we do, Ben?
Quine, you show Mr. Willard back to his cell. Come on.
Thanks, Lieutenant. The low-down crust of that crumb, that bum. What do you think of that? Some guy says he's a cigar store bandit. Hey, what did he say your name is?
Quine.
Oh, Quine.
Well,
crank.
Real psycho.
Woods are full of them. Had to happen. Cases like this pull them.
Yeah, but Mrs. Denny identified them. Of course, she could make a mistake.
Yeah, she could, Matt. Turn them loose.
Yes, Lieutenant, he took a shot at me, all right. Oh, he hit me right here in the chest. He smashed my hearing aid device. Lucky I got a spare one. Oh, he smashed it all to bits.
Oh, you were lucky, Doc.
Where were you standing when the bandit came in?
Well, I was right here. I was counting up after a hard day in the store, trying to concentrate on filling prescriptions and doing business and listening all the time. It's a relief to close up. I turn off my hearing aid and count up. Oh, my, it's a wonderful relief. Silence. You know, I wouldn't like to have all my hearing back.
And then the bandit came in?
I didn't hear him. I saw him and opened the door. First thing I know, he's pushing this little pistol into my chest and saying something. Well, naturally, I held up my hand.
Naturally?
Well, gentlemen, he gets positively red in the face. And I know he's screaming something at me, so I put down one hand and I reach under my coat to turn up my hearing aid.
Uh-oh.
Well, he whirls around. He stops at the door with the nastiest look on his face. And he fires once, and then he runs out.
What kind of a gun was it?
It was a very small gun, 22 or 22. My boy shoots a bit. He has a 22.
A 25, we think, from the slug. Ballistics has it.
It doesn't tally again, Ben. It's a different gun from the last time.
Maybe he's got a lot of guns.
Well, it's just a little gun. Well, luckily, it wasn't.
Well, how did the man look?
Well, he was small, wiry, dark eyes. Oh, and he kept looking around. Brown tweed coat, brown hat. I was pretty excited, of course.
That's our boy.
Dirty cigar box?
He never got to shove it at me, but he had it under his arm, all right.
That's him, Ben. That's our boy. Captain Waldo want, Ben?
There's something new on the cigar box, Bandit.
Number 39?
Incidental intelligence. Something's stirring. I figure it's trouble because we haven't caught anybody.
The Alumni Association wants victories or the coach has got to go.
Hello, Ben. Matt.
Hello, Bill.
Sit down, boys.
Thanks.
Thanks, Captain.
You know Gilbert Thompson, druggist corner of 79th and Grant? Been there 40 years. He's a very big man in this business. He's demanding protection for druggists. He's getting embarrassed.
I know the man. Eye for headlines.
And now he's got the eye on a seat on the council. He's making a nice little local issue out of the cigar box pendant. He's chairman of the County Merchants Association, and he's jumping with indignation.
Well, Captain, isn't he the man who flooded Grant Avenue when it was left unpaved after some cable installation and stocked the mud hole with fish? Had small kids fishing in the middle of the city?
Mm-hmm, that's Frampson.
They fined him a good one for that, as I recall.
And they also paved the street.
Oh,
I think Frampson wants us to catch the cigar box bandit.
We can't put a policeman in every back room and every drugstore in town every night.
Frampson just wants us to catch the man. See if he can soothe the fevered brow. He's expecting you, boy, so calm him down, will you?
Thompson?
Sorry, I don't see salesman on Wednesday.
I'm Lieutenant Guthrie. This is Sergeant Greb, police headquarters.
Oh, yes. Captain Waldo said I could expect you.
We'd like you to know and to pass on to your association that we're putting forth every effort to catch the cigar box bandit.
Well, it's a shame and an outrage, gentlemen. A shame and an outrage.
We've been assigning details
to... chairman of the County Merchants Association, of which there are 1,100 active members. And we're up in arms about this shame and outrage.
We understand how you feel...
1,100 members, professional men, family men. There's citizens, mind you, citizens. They're furious. What's going on? What's being done about it? I ask you, what is being done about it?
Policemen are being stationed...
Policemen?
We're putting every officer we can spare into the back rooms of drugstores, Mr. Frampton.
Well, I'm a drugstore. What about my back room? Just for example.
That's our assignment, Mr. Frampton. Sergeant Greb and I intend to spend every night this week in your prescription room, starting right now.
Is that so? The brass, eh? Well, I'm flattered, Lieutenant.
Now, if you'll show us your back room and the peepholes, we'll go to work.
There. 37 prescriptions tonight. Hard night.
Now I know why druggists go to college.
I hope we haven't been in your way back here.
Oh, not a bit. Not a bit. I'm grateful to you, gentlemen. But, as the fellow said during the war, defense won't win the war. You might wait until doomsday to get the cigar box bandit and never catch him. He's got the initiative, and that's bad.
Well, he's new to us. We're learning his methods. When we know a little more, we hope to go on the offensive.
I hope so. Excuse me. Thompson's Prescription Pharmacy. One minute. You, Lieutenant.
Thanks. Lieutenant Guthrie speaking. Yeah? Yeah.
Well, that was fast.
Captain Waldo, wanting to know what we're doing here when the drugstore in the next corner has just been stuck up by the cigar box bandit. We are making progress, Bill. In spite of our failure to lay our hands on cigar box, I insist that we're making progress.
Then why aren't you captain and me chief of police?
Bill, we've told you. We've had to wait and watch and study. But there's a very definite pattern emerging from this cigar box picture. Right, Matt?
Well, yes, there are some puzzling features, all right. Like no agreement on the gun he uses. It's been a revolver, a .22 Colt Woodsman, a .25. In general, Captain, the description of the bandit tallies, so there must be something funny about the gun.
Nothing funny. Man owns a small arsenal.
How do we get him? That's all that concerns us. Get him.
Well, we can't spare enough police to give every drugstore protection. He's smart enough to case any job he's going to pull, so he probably knows the stores that are being protected any given night.
Then stop wasting time on patrolmen and plainclothesmen, Bill.
I don't think we're wasting them, Bill. We've learned several things about our man, and he doesn't strike at random.
And it's never open prescription rooms. It's always drug stores with backroom prescription departments, so we can herd the helping back out of sight of the street.
By covering certain areas, we've confined the bandit to certain other areas. Now, if on some particular night we went all out and really detailed all areas, we might have a chance. I'd need a lot of men for two or three nights. Say, 100 men.
Ah, one night, 25 men.
Less than two nights is useless. I'll settle for 75 men. Or 60 men.
For one night.
Two nights.
Impossible.
50 men, two nights.
35, top figure.
Two nights.
One night.
Useless.
All right. Two nights, 25 men.
30 men.
But that's all.
30 men, plus Matt and me.
Including you and Matt. But if detailing the stores hasn't worked so far, it isn't going to work.
It might now.
We've got something worked out, Captain.
The bandit knows which stores are guarded. We're going to help him know which stores these are. Be very open about it in some cases, and as cagey as possible in others, within the same small neighborhood.
Just so you get him before his arteries do.
Thanks, Bill. Let's go, Matt.
Right.
Oh, Ben.
Hey, yeah, Bill.
30 men plus you.
Thanks, Captain.
What's that you're mixing up now?
Tincture of hyoscyamus, potassium citrate, and elixir of lactated pips. Now you know as much as I do.
How long does it take someone to learn to be a lady pharmacist?
As long as it takes to learn to be a gentleman pharmacist.
4 years? Five?
How long does it take for an entire police force to catch one fresh little hold-up man?
Oh, we'll get him.
I don't see how. You have to be an idiot to try to hold me up tonight after the way you've been showing yourself in front all evening.
Hmm?
Anybody can tell you're a cop.
How?
I can tell.
How? Don't answer that.
Well, you're not going to catch anything back here.
Well, maybe you're right.
Now, we had a protest vote at our last meeting.
Huh?
Village Pharmacy. Now, one moment, please. For you, Sergeant Greb.
Thanks. Hello? Oh, hello, Ben. Oh? Uh-huh. Be right there.
No, no, I'm not nervous, Lieutenant. Not too nervous to cooperate. That is, I don't think.
No, good. Now, look, if that suspicious person your customer said is watching the place is our man, we may see some action.
Well, just tell me what to do.
All right. If he comes in, you go out and wait on him. Be as natural as possible.
I see.
I'll be in here. Sergeant Greb will be across the street watching, mm-hmm. and he'll close in when it's time. The moment I come out of the prescription room, you drop. You understand, Mr. Cheney?
Drop.
Just collapse on the floor and you'll be all right. Yeah. All right, go on out.
Okay. Good evening, sir.
Say, what do you got for a toothache, Doc?
It is a small cavity or a large one?
Well, it's just a toothache. I don't know.
Well, I can give you some oil of clove.
All right, and you can put it right in this box.
Hold on. I don't understand.
This is a stakeout. Now, keep your hands down.
Oh, all right, all right.
Open the register. Come on, open it up. Come on.
Go ahead and punch it.
It's
all right.
In the stuff. In the box. Put it in the box. Come on.
Well, I'm hurrying.
And the pills, too.
It's all right. That's all. It's been a very slow day.
Get in back now. Get in the back room and lie on the floor. Hit it.
Drop, Cheney.
Cop. Lousy cop.
Stop or I'll drop you. Stop.
Sure, I'll stop. Sure.
Stay low, Cheney.
Yeah, stay low. Stay low, the both of you. Who's going to shoot who, copper? Say it again, huh? Who's shooting who? This is a pretty good little soda fountain. Don't you think so, copper?
Look out, Matt. He's behind the soda fountain. Did you get him, Matt?
Yeah, in the side. He knocked him out. He's all right.
Get down, Matt. Came from outside.
Yeah.
There, behind the mailbox.
He's down, Ben. I'll go take a look.
Okay. Take it easy.
He's dead, Ben.
It was Will Willard. Here's his gun. A Colt Woodsman.
Oh, that's the answer, Matt. There were two of them.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Two of us, copper. But we had you cops guessing, didn't we?
Brothers?
Yeah, sure. Twins.
No wonder they look alike, Ben.
Sure. He'd do a job, I'd do a job. He'd do a job, I'd do a job. He'd work, I'd watch. I'd work, he'd watch, you know?
We know now.
Your brother's the one we hadn't let go.
Yeah, we figured it out. Whoever you caught, he'd stall around till the other one pulled a job. Then the caught one, he'd confess. Pull a crank act, get me? Confess. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You think maybe that was a smart gag, huh? That was nothing, nothing. Willie had better ones, you know?
Yeah, well, tell us in the prowl car.
Willie was a smart boy, you know?
Yeah. That's why he's so dead now, because he was smart.
You know?
The lineup, where before you pass the innocent, the vagrant, the thief, the murderer. Listen again next week when we again bring you The Lineup.
Well, may I have your attention, please? You people out there on the other side of the wire in the audience room, may I have your attention, please? Thank you. My name is Greb, Sergeant Matt Greb. I'll explain the lineup to you. Each of the suspects you will see will be numbered. I'll call off a number, then name and charge. If you have any questions or identification, please remember the number assigned to the prisoner as I call his name. At the end of the line, when I ask for questions,
The Lineup on Tuned 2 yesterday, an episode heard on CBS on February 15, 1951. It had only enjoyed about a year on the network at the time of that episode, heard Thursday nights at 10. You're listening to An Hour of Crime on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now movie actor Dana Andrews stars in an episode of I Was a Communist for the FBI based on true stories from undercover operator Matt Savetic. The syndicated episode called The Little Red Schoolhouse from April 13, 1952.
I Was a Communist for the FBI. Starring Dana Andrews and an exciting tale of danger and espionage. I Was a Communist for the FBI. You are about to hear a strange story. Names, dates, and places are, for obvious reasons, fictional. But many of these incidents are based on the actual experiences of Matt Savetic, who for 9 fantastic years lived as a communist for the FBI. Here is our star, Dana Andrews, as Matt Savetic. You can read it in the official report, the whole story of my life as a communist for the FBI. I was in the party. I saw it work. For 9 years, I recorded the communist conspiracy against the United States from within. This is part of the story. Now, here is Dana Andrews as Matt Savetic, undercover man. This story from his confidential file is marked Little Red Schoolhouse.
What are you trying to do, chum? Live dangerously?
I'm sorry, mister.
Yeah, I'm nuts.
Excuse me, buddy, but have you got a match?
Sure. Here.
Thanks.
Keep them. It's a red 9 today.
Tomorrow's red 8. Hello, Matt. Been a long time since we worked together.
When did you get transferred from Detroit, Ed?
A month ago. Oh, here comes our car. Hop him back with me. Okay, Quine, take off.
Let's make it fast. You know how the party checks on my time.
Well, I wish we could offer you more protection, Matt, but...
I know. I'm on my own.
The report?
A new Soviet agent has arrived from Lenin Institute in Russia. A few picked commies have been undergoing training in propaganda and infiltration. I'm one of them.
And this new Soviet agent?
Is going to meet with us for briefing and assignment to some important jobs.
Anything else?
Meeting place is to be changed. This new Soviet agent isn't taking any chances. I don't even know his name yet.
When do you meet him?
Tonight, 6. Better drop me off now. Any place along here.
Yeah, pull it up, Gwen.
Any last instructions?
Yes, Matt. I want a full report by mail. Also, let me know by phone, if you can, the name of this new agent and the location of your meeting place.
I'll let you know.
Matt, Matt, get in quick.
Oh, sure. What's up?
That man, walking away from the corner. He was watching us.
Who is he?
Vasily Konostoy, a suspected Soviet agent. He's new here. We had him in the office for a routine check.
You? Ed, that makes him the boy from Lenin Institute.
Yes, very possibly. He knows I'm FBI, so you'd better start praying he didn't get a good look at you with me. If he did and he recognizes you later...
Spare the details. I know what'll happen. I'm in the party, remember? Whether Ed Grayson remembered or not, I did. It was the price of my life. When 6 o'clock came, I was picked up and driven to a small, isolated red brick house. Inside were 5 people, 4 men and a girl. Introductions told me the girl's name was Stephanie, and seating arrangements put us together in a corner. Close up, her dark loveliness was almost like a blow.
Comrade Matt. Comrade Matthew. No, I like Comrade Matt better. It's hard, tough, like you.
It's a tough world, Comrade Stephanie. No room for softness. We're nothing. The party and its beliefs are everything. Do you disagree with that?
Of course not, Comrade Matt. It's only that being near you makes me feel like a woman. Is that so terrible?
That's dangerous talk. I'd be more careful.
I'm always careful. We'll talk more later.
Comrades, I am Vasily Konyushkov. I bring you greetings from Comrade Stalin. He thanks you for your loyal work. But he also desires more work, more sacrifice, especially from you, picked comrades. You are to lead the way to revolution, the Soviet state of America.
While I listened, I carefully surveyed the room, the people, until I knew I would remember every detail. Vasily Konyushkov was a big man, 6'1", maybe 2, weighed around 200, black-haired with eyes that forgot to smile when he did. Those eyes stabbed me, and I knew Konyushkov's memory was at work. When the meeting was over, he kept me for a private talk.
Something to drink?
No, thanks.
My throat was dry. I have had the feeling all evening that we have met before, Comrade Svetik.
Not that I can recall.
Well, no matter. I'll remember sometime. I always do. You have a way home?
There's a cab stand only a mile from here. It's a nice walk.
Very well. Good night, Comrade.
Good night.
Comrade Matt, over here.
Oh, it's you, Comrade Stephanie.
Oh, this is my car. Would you ride into town with me?
Oh, thanks.
You drive.
Nice car. Nice girl. Nice night. Quite a combination.
I'm glad you like it.
Oh, I didn't say I liked it. I said it was quite a combination.
You are a heel, aren't you? But then I suppose I have been pretty obvious.
You have. Wow. That's some curve.
Now, with a drop-off of 100 feet, if you ever went over that embankment, it would be curtains. You should go slower.
So should you.
You needn't be rude, Matt. Except that you're the first man in a long time I've been attracted to.
Matt.
All right, Comrade Matt. I know it's heresy for a party member to have feelings. I was hoping you might understand.
Now, take it easy, Stephanie. You're tired. You're saying things that could get you into trouble.
Yeah, I guess I am tired. May I put my head on your shoulder?
Sure.
Thanks. Oh, that's a nice feeling. Your shoulder's strong.
What I said about the combination, I mean.
The car, the night, and me.
I like it.
Do you? Excuse me.
Why did you turn off the ignition?
Park for a moment.
Why?
This is why.
When I got to my hotel, dawn was breaking. Before I went to sleep, however, I made a call to a certain number and left a message for Ed Grayson to meet me that morning with the wiring crew. 5 hours sleep, then I was in a clump of woods near the Little Red Schoolhouse, listening to Ed give orders to a half dozen men loaded with wiring equipment.
All right, men. Frederick checked the house gas meter. No one's there now, but that doesn't mean they won't come back at any time. So do your work fast and do it good. Now get moving.
The mic's better be well hidden, Ed. Conestoy is sharp and suspicious.
Yeah, he'd have to tear down the walls to find these. Did he recognize you?
Yes, but he can't remember where yet.
How long is he going to be here?
I don't know. Long enough to give us a briefing and our assignments.
Yeah, we've got a lot of tape recording. We won't miss a thing that happens.
Good. I'll walk down now and grab a taxi and return to the house in the open. That way I'll be there to warn your men if Conestoy or the others show up.
Yeah, smart idea.
When will the wiring job be finished?
Oh, 6:05 if it goes fast.
That's running it pretty close. Meeting starts at 6:30.
Yeah, we'll do the best we can.
I returned later, and for the next 4.5 hours, I played watchdog in the front porch of the Red House. From inside, I could hear the sounds of Grayson's men at work. At 5:42, the FBI men reported their job finished. They were packing up their equipment to leave by the back door when around the curve, I saw Conestoy's car approaching. Beat it, you guys. Flash red, flash red.
Well, Comrade Stretchy. What are you doing here so early?
I thought I'd like to talk to you, Comrade Conestoy.
Oh? Let's go inside.
Oh, wait.
What?
I mean, it's so nice out here. Why don't we just stay on the porch? I can talk here.
Crazy, we could be spotted out here inside.
Oh, but Comrade...
You'd better keep it in mind that I give the orders.
Well, I guess being inside is not so bad after all.
What's the matter with you? You look as if you expected to see something. What is it?
I merely wanted to be sure we were alone. I have a report to make about one of our comrades.
Oh, is that so? Which one?
Comrade Stephanie. She shows definite signs of bourgeois emotionalism.
Oh, I see. Then you had better watch her. Keep me informed.
I will.
You really are a fanatic, aren't you, Comrade Tragic?
I believe and follow the party line.
Oh, don't mistake me. We need a few good fanatics. I wish I could remember where I have seen you before. Haunts me as if it's important that I should remember.
The next few days were a growing fever of tension for me. The briefing was hard and thorough. I had little time to do anything but study, and this was complicated by constant invitations to study with Comrade Stephanie. And always hanging over my head was the threat of Conestoy's possible remembrance of seeing me with an FBI man. Finally, the last day of the week rolled round.
Tonight, comrades, you receive your assignments. You have been well trained. Now you will act on that training.
We will organize infiltration of schools?
That is correct. You, Comrade Svetik, receive a choice plum. Do you know Bryson University?
Yes, small college not far north of here.
Though small, Bryson is a highly respected school. An example to many other colleges. You and Comrade Stephanie will see that the seeds of communism are planted there.
We'll not fail, Comrade Conestoy.
I'm sure you won't. Comrade Svetik, about where I have seen you. Perhaps you were around my hotel for some reason?
No.
No. Well, don't worry. Maybe by the time you finish your assignment, I will remember.
How long did I have before the Soviet agent, Conestoy, remembered seeing me with an FBI man? The knowledge of what would happen when he did was a cold, leaden ball in my stomach. As with Comrade Stephanie, I listened to Conestoy's final instructions on our new assignment to infiltrate Bryson University.
There is one professor at Bryson who will be your best asset, Comrade Svetik. A Professor Walden.
Is he a fellow traveler?
A very reluctant one. You will have to play down everything except how communism will save the oppressed from the tyranny of fascism. Walden is fond of helping underdogs.
Well, can you get us a big name, Comrade Conestoy, someone to lecture the students?
I will send a wire tonight to Philip Stanley.
The singer?
Yes. He has a big reputation. The kids will listen to him even if he is a pinko chump.
Will he come?
He'll come. He's a thoroughgoing exhibitionist. Now, here is some expense money. Comrade Stephanie?
Yes?
I'm sending you with Comrade Svetik for only one reason. So you can have the opportunity to get your thinking straight by watching his.
Well, I don't understand you.
He is an exemplary party worker. If you are wise, when you come back, you will be too. That's all. Good night.
Good night, Comrade Conestoy.
Good night, Comrade.
Oh, Comrade Svetik.
Yes?
I just remembered where I saw you.
Where?
At the meeting of the Control Commission, the first day I arrived back here from the Lenin Institute.
Oh, no, I wasn't at that meeting.
Oh, I swear I had better remember it soon or it will be the death of me.
Bryson University. The usual ivied buildings and rolling green campus littered with students. Professor Walden turned out to be a thin, white-haired man with bent, iron-rimmed spectacles. His office was a 6-foot square of stale air wrapped around a battered desk and a stack of papers.
Yeah, your coming to see me like this has posed quite a moral problem, Mr. Svetik. Yes, indeed, quite a problem. You see, I am not sure I am in complete sympathy with communist teachings.
Oh, of course, but we're not here to ask you to become a communist professor. We merely ask you to work with us in bringing relief to the unfortunates of the world.
Oh? Well, in that case, what can I do to help?
Two things. Give us a list of students you believe to be in sympathy with our cause.
And the others?
We're going to organize a lecture. Philip Stanley, the famous singer, is flying all the way out here to address the students. It would be nice if you could act as master of ceremonies and introduce him.
Oh, why, of course. I'll be delighted. Philip Stanley, indeed.
Professor Walden gave us a list of a dozen names, and we went right to work on it. Heading the list was a boy named Roger Vanning. We found him in the Student Union, a hodgepodge of noise and smoke which figures as the social center of any college.
My goodness, Matt, this is like Mardi Gras. We'll never find him in all this mess.
Sure we will, but keep moving or you'll be crushed.
Wow! Hey, fellas, get a load of this one. She's real great all the way.
Looks like you've made a hit, Stephanie. Ask him if he knows Vanning.
All right. Excuse me, but do you know where I can find Roger Vanning?
Yeah, yonder, Sam. Oh. Why not take a seat here, Dolly? For you, I'd go on the hook.
That'll do, Junior.
Don't tense, Dad. I ain't cruising for bruising.
Come on, Stephanie. That Roger Vanning looked like a kid who can vote. You'd better handle him alone. I'll try the next one on our list, Grace Sprocket. Meet you out front later. So you see, Miss Sprocket, it's up to the intelligentsia, like yourself, to lead the others.
I understand perfectly, Mr. Svetik. And I can promise you at least 20 students for the meeting.
Good. Philip Stanley will know of your work, I can assure you.
He will? I mean, of course, that I'm naturally quite pleased to be connected with Mr. Stanley in such a worthy cause. You may tell him he can depend upon Grace Sprocket.
Sure, I'll tell him. Four days of work, and we had nearly 200 students lined up for our demonstration. I hired a hall near the campus, decorated it with the usual banners and slogans. During last-minute preparations, my mind was on Conestoy. Would he have remembered yet? Perhaps he had, and even now the goon squad was on its way.
Ah, oh, me. Oh, these are terrible acoustics, Svetik. Perfectly awful. Really shouldn't sing at all in a barn like this. After all, you know, these boys and girls are my public. They deserve to hear me at my best.
No, absolutely, Mr. Stanley. However, just being able to see you in person and hear your words of truth will inspire these young people to magnificent heights. They'll recognize you as something far greater than a singing star.
Greater than a star?
Of course. You'll be known as a social leader, a man destined to sway multitudes toward the goal of true socialistic society.
Well, I hadn't thought of it that way. Excuse me, Svetik. I think I'll go run over this speech you prepared for me.
Better practice it, knucklehead. I hope I can keep my dinner when I hear it.
Oh, Matt, come here a minute, will you?
Sure. What is it, Stephanie?
Well, I just wanted to check plans with you.
Okay. After his song, Stanley will give his talk. At the end, when he starts the Internationale, you give Grace Sprocket and the other agitators the signal to jump up and begin a community sing out of it.
And when the crowd's good and excited, Sprocket and company lead them off for a demonstration on Faculty Row, right?
Mm-hmm. And be sure the placards and signs are ready for them to pick up on the way out. Come on, let's get this thing rolling.
Ladies and gentlemen of Bryson, this evening marks the beginning of a new movement here in Bryson. A movement that will excite you as it has excited me. Tonight, we are striking a blow against oppression.
So, my beloved friends, here at Bryson, I want to thank you for your wonderful reception of my humble talent and words. In closing this meeting, I can only think of the words of a song dear to my heart and dear to the hearts of all who have compassion for the more unfortunate of this earth. Sing it with me. The words are on the sheets of paper you found in your seats. That's it. The Internationale. Sing it with me. All right, ye victims of privation, rise up, all ye who are forlorn.
Sing it, let's all sing it.
Sing it loud. There's an end to degradation. For a new world being born.
Everything went off like clockwork. Excited by the speeches and music, and led by the screaming Grace Sprocket and a cohort, the thoughtless kids eagerly snatched up the waiting placards and signs to start the demonstration on the campus. For an hour, Stephanie and I watched from the background as the shouting, chanting students paraded on Faculty Row.
Not a very pretty sight, Matt.
Are you crazy? It's exactly what we wanted.
The police! There'll be a riot for sure.
Right. That's why I called him. Come on, Stephanie. Our work here is done. Here we are, Stephanie. Back at the Little Red Schoolhouse. Come on. Conestoy's waiting for us.
Let him wait for a minute. I'm sick of it, Matt. I'm sick of the rottenness, of the lying and cheating. Let's quit the party, you and I. We could go away together.
What? You must be out of your stupid mind, talking to me this way.
Well, what are you going to do?
What do you think I'm going to do? I'm going to report you. The party has ways of dealing with treason.
Oh, no, please, don't turn me in, Matt. I'm sorry.
It's too late. Get inside.
I heard the report on the radio. You did a good job, comrade. What's the trouble? You look angry.
I am angry. This traitor just tried to make me quit the party.
Oh, did she? I told you, Comrade Stephanie. Comrade Svetik is as solid as the Kremlin.
He sure is.
Wait a minute. You mean I was just being tested?
Testing high-ranking party members is my job, Comrade Svetik. I'm an agent of the MVD. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'll have to get back to town and file my report.
Tested. After all my years in the party.
Happens to all of us. Oh, yes. I have something for you. A reward. Here in this drawer.
Reward?
This. Put up your hands.
A gun? What's this all about? I don't understand.
FBI agent. That's where I saw you. You were talking to an FBI man. I told you I would remember.
Oh, now look, I can explain that.
Get out to my car, you dirty stool pigeon. Move!
What do you plan to do? Do you mind telling me?
Yes, I will be glad to. I want you to have time to be afraid. We are going to arrange a little suicide. Your suicide.
My only hope was the FBI surveillance. Conestoy and I were at his car when the FBI men moved in on the run, Ed Grayson leading. Conestoy opened the car door just as Grayson squeezed a shot over our heads.
Down, Matt, down!
I hit the dirt in that precious second when Conestoy's attention was distracted by Grayson. Then Conestoy made his break.
Stop! Conestoy, stop! All right, then, get him! Get him!
FBI fire laced the night with red as it went over me, but Conestoy had a good start. He was getting away when he hit that bad curve doing 70. Then there was nothing on earth that could save him as his car skidded over the steep embankment.
No use calling an ambulance. Conestoy's dead. Better clear out, fellas, and let the police handle this as an accident. I'll stick around and square it with them.
See you later, Grace.
It's a tough way to go.
Lucky for you, though, Matt. You're free to keep on with your work.
Yeah, he was the only one who knew. Well, I'd better get out of here. Think I'll walk up and take a last look at the little red schoolhouse. No, it wasn't the end of a story, nor the beginning. It was just a part of the strange war I was fighting. Freedom's a good cause. It made me feel contented, even though I knew that until the war was won, I'd always be a man who walked alone.
I was a communist for the FBI, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 13th of April, 1952, a syndicated episode. And that wraps up this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.